So hello and welcome to Radio Jackie. My name is Philip and today I'm joined by Luke Belfield, and he wants to be the first person with juvenile arthritis to swim across the channel. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Philip. How's it going?
It's going well. It's a lovely day today. It's nice to see you.
Good.
So tell us a little bit about this. So why did you decide that you want to do this journey?
There's a plethora of reasons. So the main reason is to really raise awareness that arthritis shouldn't limit sports, and showcasing swimming, this non-contact, non-impact, non-weight-bearing sport that's really recognised by physios, it's a pathway to healing for community and long-term well-being as well. So really what I want to do is raise awareness, to change the narrative, to reduce diagnosis time. You know, 10,000 to 12,000 children under the age of 16 in the UK are diagnosed with arthritis. So this isn't just an old person's disease.
When were you diagnosed with arthritis?
I was diagnosed at the age of 11. My ankle swelled to the size of a tennis ball at the age of 11. And we went around from hospital to hospital trying to seek a diagnosis. We tried everything from vegan diets to chiropractors to anything and everything that we could to possibly try to make it better. Eventually, when we went to Great Ormond Street Hospital, it was diagnosed as juvenile arthritis. And from there, they put me on the right medications, and things slowly but surely started to get better.
It must have been quite difficult for you as like a child to have this. What was that experience like?
It was really, really difficult to wrap your head around something that was so uncertain. Is just impossible. And in a way, this has parallels with the channels. You know, there's so much uncertainty when it comes to the channel as well. So the issue is they weren't sure whether it was going to be something that could extend into adulthood or not. So with that, it was really, really hard to wrap your head around it. Obviously, from a school point of view, it wasn't the easiest time as well. Football was my absolute passion, and I was absolutely obsessed with football. It's all I wanted to talk about and all I wanted to play. And having a condition where I had to be sidelined, being the P's assistant teacher, the PE's teacher's assistant, was an absolute, it was heartbreaking really, watching all my friends doing the thing that I really wanted to do. So yeah, obviously I was in pain. There was times where I was on crutches and I had to relearn how to walk again. It was a really, really difficult time, and you know, kids aren't exactly the nicest all the time as well. There were some you know, bullies with some words that, you know, like peg leg and all these other horrible kind of things that children do. And I did have this recurring kind of nightmare where I was just being chased by bullies, and it felt like I was kind of stuck in quicksand almost. So it was a really, really difficult time to process mentally and physically. For me, I never opened up to anyone about it. I had deep shame about having this old person's disease. So I never really talked about it to anyone. I just kept it inside.
So it sounded like you used to be really into football, but now this is like about swimming. Is there like a reason why you've made those changes?
Yeah, sure. So I guess when football got taken away from me, you know, I didn't accept it. So at 11, you know, it was something that I couldn't do, and all the way really to the age of 15. So around 14, I was really lucky to find badminton. So one of my friends was also playing badminton, and you know, it's a non-contact sport, badminton, and you know, you don't really need to move much. And the great thing about movement is it is critical to leading a holistic life, and it is recommended by physios, even if you are in pain, to kind of keep moving. So after transitioning kind of across to badminton, it was, well, just because I can't play football doesn't mean that I can't do sports. So yeah, and then I went into remission really luckily at the age of 18, and I really just led a normal life. From there, I went to the gym a lot. It's something that I really heavily love and invested in. And swimming just came a lot later in life. You know, I never swam as a kid. I knew how to front crawl. I could maybe do about 100 meters breaststroke in the pool, but that was about it. So really, it's only been the last 3 years that I've really found swimming, and there's just such a lovely segue between how it can improve, you know, conditions like arthritis, being, you know, such a non-contact, non-impact, non-weight-bearing sport.
Oh, so it's like a sport which allows you to be really active, but it doesn't really agitate the arthritis that you have then.
Totally, exactly.
How many people have this youth arthritis then? Is it quite common?
So 10,000 to 12,000 children in the UK under the age of 16 have it. Now, this is obviously the people who have been diagnosed. My story is not uncommon. I know people who have been undiagnosed for 7 years with it because I am speaking with doctors, with patients, with parents, with charities, with, you know, people like kind of involved in that community. And it's a very common thing. So it is something which is, you know, very, very, it's something that can be quite prominent and something which isn't necessarily diagnosed well. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like it's quite difficult because you said, you got your symptoms when you're quite young, but you didn't get diagnosed immediately.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so how long have you been preparing for this swim?
So I guess the way that I got into it was, so I started doing the gym, and through the gym I started strengthening, and it was just sheer luck that that I really chose a gym. I mean, to be honest with you, it was more of a body image thing. It was more of a way to attract, you know, the other sex and everything. So that was really, really great. And it was also a thing of, in my youth, the physios suggested stuff like doing squats, deadlifts, and everything else. So I was, again, obsessed with the gym. And the great thing about gym is, you know, once you start doing the gym, it impacts your sleep, it impacts your nutrition, it impacts stress management, it impacts everything, and all of the lovely hormones that you get kind of help with that. So I was obsessed with that. And unfortunately, at the age of 24, I relapsed, meaning the arthritis came back after an infection hit my body. And I reacted very well to it. I had this kind of deluded positivity mindset where I was like, this isn't going to hurt me, this isn't going to touch me. And it was at that point that I said to myself, at some point, I'm going to do the pinnacle of a cardio exercise. You know, I want to run a marathon. This would happen 5 years later down the line. So after I was put on strong immunosuppressants, which basically suppress my immune system, so I have to inject myself with that every 2 weeks, I have to have blood tests and everything kind of taken, what would then happen is I would then get into this mindset of, okay, how do I run this marathon? What's the best way to do it? And I was really lucky because my boss at the time was someone who was involved in that community. It was at that point that I dropped drinking. I dropped a lot of the kind of habits that maybe weren't helping and aiding the arthritis. So at this point I was like super healthy, super focused on it. And it's something that I managed to complete. And for the first time I was open about arthritis, and for that reason it will always be the best thing that I've ever kind of achieved in life, because I was so liberated with the fact that I could be open about it, and I was having such great support from all my mentors and everything. So I was just really, really lucky to do that. So at that point, then COVID hit in 2020, and then it was a thing of, well, how can I go bigger and better? Because after COVID, it was like, and I was listening to this podcast back in 2015, a guy called Rich Roll, and he was talking about Ironmans and triathletes. So I got into a half Ironman with the running background. And at that point, it was like, well, okay, you have to learn how to swim. You have to buy your first bike as an adult. How was all that going to work? So I joined my local triathlon club called Full On Tri, and I started swimming in the pool. And I really actually enjoyed the motions of swimming because it's a very technical sport. It's not necessarily about strength and speed. It's more about technique and how you can kind of work with the water. So I did my first open water swim, which was a 4 kilometer swim for charity. And it went really, really well. And I was actually surprised with how unfearful I was with the open water. And I was so lucky because on that swim with the Spire, a charity who kind of help with spinal diseases, I met this guy who did what's called the arch to arc. And this is when you run from Marble Arch to Dover, you then swim the channel, and then you cycle from the Cap Grenet in France to the Arc de Triomphe. And I was just blown away by this guy, absolutely blown away. I mean, he was a 60-year-old guy. He was a photographer who was just taking photos on the boat. He didn't necessarily look like an athlete, and I was absolutely shocked by him. And this was my kind of introduction into channel swimming. I'd heard one or two people had done it, but I never thought I would actually meet a channel swimmer.
What's the process of applying to be a channel swimmer? It's not just something you can just do, I assume.
It is something you can just really sign up for. Any old person can sign up for it. There is a 3-year waiting list, so
there you go.
I think that's the thing you need to really, unless you know the right people, for an average person, and in a way that's a good thing, because there are so many. Maybe I was very naive in thinking, oh, you know, I can sort of just black this, you know, I've done an Ironman, I'm sure I can swim the channel. But there's so many facets to it. You've got to be comfortable with cold water, you've got to be comfortable swimming in the dark, you've got to be comfortable with jellyfish, you've got to be comfortable with uncertainty, tapering as well, because there's no set date or time when the channel swim is going to happen. They literally let you know 6 p.m. the night before that this is your day. You have a window because the tides and the currents are so strong, and tides are predictable, but weather is very unpredictable, so they want for the tides to work with the winds.
How long is the swim going to take you? Like, I know there's like a not an exact time, but what would be like the average?
It's a great question. So the average is around 14 to 15 hours. The fastest person, Andreas Freshberg, has done it in about, I think it's six hours and 55 minutes. The not so fastest person did it in 29 hours. So it can take really anywhere between there. And what's crazy is just the inconsistency of how you are at the mercy of Mother Nature. You know, you're merely a passenger floating in this body of water. And, you know, Poseidon will dictate whether or not you get across. So if the tides are working with you, you might get a very, very quick time. If the tides are working against you, you're either going to be pulled out or not. So roughly 44% of people are unsuccessful on the channel swim. It tends to be that women are slightly more successful than men. I guess there is more of an endurance kind of mindset when it comes to it. And it's fascinating as well, just the difference between men and women as well, because the communities are pretty much run by the women, and they give such a lovely vibe of cake and everything. And then the really, really long distance swimmers, so like Sarah Thomas, for example, she's someone who's done a 4-way channel crossing, which from England to France, France to England, England to France, and then back from France to England.
Wow.
Only person in history to have done that. She did that in something like 54 or 58 hours, one or the other. So it's a fascinating sport.
When you're swimming for that amount of time, like, how do you drink and eat? I assume it must be quite difficult.
It is slightly difficult. It's something that you need to practice, absolutely. So there are two main components to eating. So first of all, you have the liquids. So this is like the primary thing that you need to be drinking and consuming, rather. So this is like cornstarch. So it's called maltodextrin, with fructose and some electrolytes as well, because you get some of the electrolytes from the salt within the sea. So the idea there is you can feed on 30 minutes, 45 minutes, or an hour. People like Andreas Freshberger, he drunk every 13 minutes, and feeds can take drinking can take anywhere between 3 seconds all the way to 2 minutes. The idea is, though, it's a feed, not a rest, because that amount of time compounds. If you take a feed every 30 minutes for 2 minutes, and you're a 15-hour swimmer, that's an extra hour that you're adding to your time, and the tides can change on the drop of a dime. With solids, for me personally, it's bananas, peaches, chocolates like mini rolls, and all these other kind of softer things that you can just get straight down you because of the time aspect of it. There are people, however, absolutely crazy people, who blend English breakfasts or blend roasts, which I think is just absolutely incredibly... I mean, the channel's hard enough, let alone getting that down your throat. But I guess everyone's different, and nutrition is very unique. So
yeah, so that makes sense. And like, so what's the process of actually the practice? Like, how are you practicing for this feat?
So I guess the wonderful thing about the way I've approached it is I've not necessarily stuck to one mindset or one camp. I am very lucky to say that I am a member of many clubs. So Serpentine, who are all crewing for me. So big shout out to Law, to Boris, and to Rob Aldcott from the Serpentine. So there kind of is run by Nick Adams, and he pretty much says, you know, that's all about intensity. So in the pool, for example, you want to be doing sprints. There are other people like Sally Minty Gravett, MBE, who's based out in Jersey with the JLDSC. She believes very much in longevity. She's someone who has done 6 decades of channel swimming, and she's done 2 ways as well. Same with Nick Adams. So she very much believes in going slow but strong. And then you've got people like Kevin Murphy, the king of the channel, who's done it, who's crossed the channel a whopping 34 times.
Wow.
Amazing. And his thing is volume. So his thing is just get out there into the sea and swim as much as you can. So when I went on his camp, we did 2 6-hour training swims. So we were swimming for 24 hours over the space of 6 days in the water. So, and there you're with world record holders and everything. It's just fascinating to see. So there isn't really one kind of mindset, but if I was to boil it down to maybe the few components, you want to be copying and mirroring what your attempt is. So if you're swimming in the sea, you want to be swimming in the sea. And that sounds really basic, but obviously you can't swim in the sea all year round. So you do use lakes with cold water, for example. So I use a Serpentine a lot when, you know, it's on Christmas Day, for example. I kind of did the Christmas Day race, the Peter Pan Cup, which is the oldest race in history. So it's really just a combination of many different things. I mean, also a quick shout out to Ray Gibbs, who is also my coach. He assigns me drills in what's called like an infinite pool. So the idea is that it's like a water treadmill. So you've got current coming at you, and he has like 8 different cameras around you. So you can really assess like your catch, your rotation, your length, and your kind of head being still as well. So it's a combination of pool swimming with drills and intensity, volume, but then also resting, and as resting is such a key component.
And who are you fundraising for?
I'm fundraising for a charity called Versus Arthritis. So Versus Arthritis helped me through my childhood. So all of the donations will go directly to Versus Arthritis. So all of my swims, all the camps, all the accommodation for the crew, all the boat fees, everything is kind of funded by me, because this is a charity that I deeply, deeply believe in. Versus Arthritis are a very umbrella kind of charity, so they're really wonderful. They work with researchers, with the community as well, so people with arthritis. They raise awareness because there are many different types of arthritis, everything from ankylosing spondylitis, which is in the back, to rheumatoid arthritis, as well as kind of helping younger children as well. And that is obviously my main focus. So with the younger children, the reason why I absolutely love them is they set up camps. So for example, two months ago, they walked over the O2. So they got a big community of kind of younger children together with JIA, and they walked over the O2, which I just think is phenomenal. In October, they've got an arts camp as well in Essex. So it's just a great way to bond and a great way to talk about stuff, because having long-term diseases can feel very lonely and very isolating when you don't have people to connect to and people who don't understand. And whilst there are amazing people who listen, you know, having someone who is also going through the trenches with you, you just automatically feel very close and bonded to those persons. So I wish that I had that when I was younger. And obviously with misdiagnoses, you know, it's really, really not easy to know, you know, when, you know, if it's kind of the thing that you have. So it's everything that Versus Arthritis are doing. So
Do you mind passing over the information about like socials or fundraising aspects or anything like that?
On Instagram, I am Arthritis Swimmer. I post a lot of videos just around channel swimming, but also around raising awareness about arthritis as well. So because I work, you know, with the doctors, with patients, with parents as well, like I have, you know, I've done some high school talks and everything. So I have all that content on there. I also have on my YouTube channel, it's called From Crutches to Kilometers. So that's the longer form stuff where you'll see, you know, everything from 3-minute videos all the way to hour long videos with kind of doctors, with patients, but then also some of my longer swims as well. So I did a Jersey to France with Sally Minty Gravett MBE and the Jersey lot. So that was from, yeah, Jersey to France. It's a 31 kilometer swim. Took me 10 hours and 14 minutes. So that has all the highlights and the things there. So that's a really nice thing. And then there's a Just Giving page as well. So if you just put into Google Luke Belfield's English channel, yeah, it should pop up. I think the URL is justgiving.com/Luke Solo English Channel, something like that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here at Radio Jackie, Luke Belfield. So again, I'm going to say it at the end, Luke Belfield is swimming across the channel for youth arthritis or against youth arthritis, or to let people know about it. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Philip. Really appreciate it.
Cheers.
Cheers.